Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
You know the voice.
If you've ever watched even 5 minutes of 19 Kids and Counting, you've heard it. The breathy, childlike whisper, high-pitched, impossibly gentle. Like a woman reading a bedtime story to the entire country at the same time.
Millions of people heard Michelle Duggar speak that way for over a decade on national television. And most of them probably thought, well, she's just soft-spoken. She's sweet.
She's a devoted mother. That's just how she talks, right?
Except it isn't. Not according to her own family. Her niece, Amy King Duggar, has said publicly that Michelle's baby voice is deliberately done, a performance cultivated to project meekness and submission. And Michelle herself has been open about where it came from. She's admitted on camera at IBLP conferences that she struggled with serious anger problems. Jesus. Her solution wasn't therapy. It wasn't self-reflection. It came from a Gothard wisdom booklet. Oh. The curriculum published by Bill Gothard's Institute in Basic Life Principles. I bet we're all running out going right now, where can I get this wisdom booklet so I too can speak like that? Let's be honest for just a quick second here. Isn't there just the teeniest bit of you that wishes, wouldn't it be nice if I truly felt that joyful all the time? And then you go, do you really feel that joyful all the time? Or is this a giant mask that you're wearing and there's something much deeper or angry behind that? I'm going to go with B. I'm going to go with the door B, Bob, because I think that that might be what we're dealing with here more than true, you know, elated joy at all points of life. I'm going to guess there might be a mask, in my opinion. So, what was the solution that Michelle Duggar allegedly learned from the wisdom booklets? I just love that word, wisdom booklets. From IBLP. Well, the wisdom booklets, here's the wisdom that they gave Michelle. Whisper. Not making this shit up. Whisper.
Keep your voice low. A soft answer turns away wrath. Don't address the anger. Just make sure nobody can hear it.
That voice was there when Michelle learned her teenage son had been going into his sister's room at night. It was there when she sat on a Fox News set in 2015 and told Megyn Kelly that her daughters
didn't even really understand
what happened to them. So I guess that makes it okay, right? I know Michelle didn't say it makes it okay. That's my conjecture. But when you're making excuses like that for your own son diddling your own daughters, yeah, there's something not okay with that.
They didn't even understand.
Most victims don't. But you have to be part of society and hear the words of the rest of the world outside of the 19 folks in your house to understand how these sort of things work. You can be ignorant to them your whole life, or maybe you're not at all. Maybe you just don't want to handle the reality of what's going on around you.
And it's easier to talk like this. No one's going to question you. No one's going to expose you. If all you do is talk like this.
Until today. Hi. We're not going to let you just kind of sit there off in the corner anymore and be the one that's just meek and lovely, because you know what? The betrayal of a mother to her daughters Her daughters were being actively abused in their own home, and you're just like, they didn't even know what was going on?
It's okay, you can stay in the house, we're all good.
And then bring the predator back in and ask them to forgive him. And everybody's just going to be fine. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It'll be great. I wonder if that ever happens over there on the compound. That's a pretty shitty betrayal. And it's already happened a long time ago. You already got kids in this family that have left because of it and now have to keep their own boundaries up for their own mental health, in their own words. So it's high time we talk about this, and it's high time we talk about the price of the silence, of the abuse, of sticking your head in the sand and talking in a whisper. And while you may have had the best of intentions, Michelle, well, your intentions were shit. Your attentions led to horrible behaviors of the people you were raising, enabling them. One may argue that, being A-okay with, let's go have Joshy hang some drywall and come on back, he must be cured, was not an effective method of treatment and put your entire family at risk. That's an opinion. Some may say it's a fact. I'm going to go with opinion. It's hard to factualize all of that and say, here's the exact cause and effect. Now, Michelle's never been charged with anything. I'm not saying she should be, not saying she is. This is more for the argument because I'm not an attorney. I can't say criminally responsible for anything. That's for the investigators to keep digging into, and we'll see where they go. I'm going to say it's an absolute moral failure. Hidden under the guise of your umbrella of religion. Spoken in a whisper. And bamboozling millions of people who watched your bullshit television series. To think, oh, isn't this quaint? Oh, if only everybody lived like this. Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? It turns out more people do than not. Turns out these people actually live more like you. To everybody out there is in the real world going, oh God, it's horrible out here. I wish I was more like them. Nah. You don't.
They didn't really even understand.
And it was there in August of 2014 on a robocall she recorded for the Arkansas Family Council, warning voters in Fayetteville that a non-discrimination ordinance would let males with past child convictions enter women's restrooms, while her own son's sealed police file sat in a cabinet in Springdale, Arkansas. She's warning people about predators, and she's completely, seemingly ignorant to the one that lives in her home. Or ones that lived in her home. One may not have gone down the road of predatory behavior quite yet, but one certainly already had. The question this episode is asking isn't whether Michelle Duggar loved her children. We know she did. And does. The question is whether the relentless performance of joy, the whisper, the smile, the unshakable sweetness, function as something far darker than faith. Whether it was in practice a silencing mechanism. A system designed not to heal trauma, but to make it invisible. Because when the doctrine you follow teaches that the correct response to pain is gratitude, the victims don't just go unheard. They learn to stop recognizing themselves as victims at all. To understand what Michelle Duggar built inside that household, you have to understand the doctrine she was allegedly following, not in the abstract, but in the daily, lived, applied to children version. And as we do, your thoughts in the comments section. Maybe you're also a survivor of the IBLP. I've been hearing from a lot of you lately, and I welcome your feedback, your insight into how this monstrous system has functioned is
priceless. So please do share. Your voices are what is going to help to get the surviving people who are still stuck in the crutches or the clutches of these demons out, in my opinion. IBLP teaches what is called the umbrella of authority. God at the top, husband beneath God, wife beneath husband, children beneath both. If you step outside your husband's authority, if you question, resist, or push back, you have opened your family to spiritual attack. That's not a metaphor. That's literal IBLP teaching. Jim Bob Duggar himself said it on camera. If we allow a hole in our umbrella, Satan will come in and attack our family. For Michelle, that meant submission wasn't a suggestion. It was survival. It was required. She stared at Jim Bob when he spoke. She deferred in every public interaction. She adopted the voice, the posture, the soft focused gaze of a woman performing godliness in the way Gothard's materials defined it. She did it pretty good. She's going to give her points for following instructions. Damn, good job. And then she taught her daughters to do the same. On her blog, Michelle wrote a post advising wives to be joyfully available to their husbands sexually, no matter what. Ha! Her framing? Anyone else can iron his shirts or make him lunch, but only you can meet that one special need. Smile. Say yes. Be willing. Even when you're exhausted. Even when you're pregnant. Even when you don't feel like it. It's funny because if you just kind of move those words around a little bit, especially the don't feel like it part, and a man wants to do something like that to you, or reverse roles, whoever, another human being wants to do something like that to you, and you don't feel like it, there's a special word for it we have here in the English vernacular, and it starts with an R. And if we say it out loud, YouTube suddenly doesn't like to push our videos out there. So we're not going to do that. That's what that is, Michelle. It's not giving it up for God. It's not just appeasing your husband. But when you're taught that that's what you have to do, that's what God wants you to do. And the husbands are taught, well, that's what they're supposed to do for you. If they're good Christian women, she'll just do whatever you want, whenever you want. Isn't that the joys of the being all under Jesus-y umbrellas? You put it in the context of something like this, and you put him on a farm in Arkansas, and it to the general public that then watches this on TV, it looks all, oh, this is just precious, isn't it? Look at this. You do it. You do this in a warehouse building in Chicago, and you have R. Kelly. It's like, change the skin tone a little bit, and just the actual setting of where it's happening, and one's coercive control in a harem and horrible. Because keep in mind, R. Kelly's followers, whatever you want to call them, victims, the folks who were going on television and saying, we're down with all this. Is it really that much different than the Duggars? They're saying, we're down with all this. Both motivated by fear. Fear of eternal damnation. Fear of the wrath of R. Kelly writing a shitty R&B song about you. Or whatever the hell he's going to do. Please, not another chapter of Trapped in the Closet. No more. 10 of you got that joke. If you ever want to torture yourself, watch all, I don't know how many chapters of Trapped in the Closet there are of R. Kelly. It's comical. And you'll eventually want to go to an Arkansas plot of land buy it, build a compound, and create 19 children and lock yourself away from society. Maybe that's what happened. Because I think Trapped in the Closet came out prior to the Duggars. Maybe they watched that a lot. I'm like, oh my God, we have to remove ourselves from society. Let's go have 19 kids while listening to Trapped in the Closet.
Smile. Say yes. Be willing. Even when you're exhausted. Even when you're pregnant. Even when you don't feel like it.
That feeling or that teaching didn't stop at the maternal or the marital bedroom. It filtered into how the daughters were raised. Because under IBLP, a girl's body, this is creepy, belonged first to her father and then to her future husband. There was no stage in between where it belonged to her. There was no framework saying no. There was no language for it. Michelle described her approach to infant discipline at IVLP conferences. She would place a baby on a blanket with a favorite toy position just out of reach. Every time the child reached for it, she struck the child's hand. Because that's a great idea. You like your toy? Boom! The goal was to teach obedience before the child could walk. She coached the baby while she did it.
Sit really still and look at me with a big old smile. Boom!
I don't know how this all went down, and I'm not saying that that's exactly how it went down, but whatever the hell she described, I guess, is up for interpretation. She didn't do a demo of it on stage. Wouldn't that have been fun TV? That'd make for some good YouTube videos today, wouldn't it? Let's strike the children. This is, I know, this is a way of teaching obedience, and some people follow it. Some people subscribe to it. Think, this is a great idea. This ain't going to lead to PTSD or anything. So the allegations. Some of it's just exactly what she said on stage. That's what's so striking about so much of this case. So much of it is just out there in the open. It's not even assumptions. It's not even, I mean, there are some places where there's conjecture, but there is so much of this where it is just literally out there. Out there and nobody said anything. You're, oh, this is so cute. Isn't this great? The Duggar children were raised under what the family called the points of obedience, instant, cheerful, thorough, and unconditional, not just compliance, joyful compliance. Resistance was framed as spiritual failure. Pain was framed as gratitude. And the children internalized it because they had no exposure to any other way of thinking. Michelle homeschooled them using IBLP's own curriculum. There was no outside input, no school counselor, no teacher who might ask a question, no mandatory reporter. We know that. This wasn't just parenting philosophy. This was the infrastructure that made it impossible for victims to name what happened to them, to identify what happened to them, because the language of pain had been systematically replaced with the language of praise. In 2002, Josh Duggar told his parents that he'd been doing things to his sisters. Michelle's response, the one she chose to share on national television years later, sitting across from Megyn Kelly, was this. We felt we're failures. Not our daughters were violated. Not we need to get these children to a hospital. Not we need to call the police. First instinct was shame about the family image. And that might be part of the equation. You may feel that way. And you should feel that way. Shame is a powerful thing if you actually use it and change your ways. Or it can, I guess, help you dig in even more when you just say, it's Satan! Satan's making this happen. Not possibly the environment to which you are harboring these children. They did not call law enforcement. They did not take the girls to see a licensed counselor. They spoke to church elders. They prayed. Josh asked his sister for forgiveness. The girls, some of whom, according to sworn testimony from family friend Bobby Holt, were too young to understand what had happened, including one who was five. They were expected to forgive, though. Under the doctrine, they had been raised since infancy. They had no framework to refuse. Josh continued. There were subsequent incidents. Eventually, Jim Bob drove Josh to speak with Joseph Hutchins, a state trooper who was a family friend. Hutchins was later convicted of child charges and sentenced to 56 years in prison. That was the Duggar family's idea of bringing in an authority figure. I know. I mean, you can't, this can't go more wrong. When In Touch magazine published the police report in 2015, Jim Bob and Michelle didn't step back. They didn't go quiet. They went on the offense. Fox News, Megyn Kelly, primetime. Michelle sat beside Jim Bob, and in that voice, that trained, cultivated, doctrinally mandated whisper, she told the audience that her girls didn't even really, they didn't really understand it was an improper touch. She said the family had always solved it. It had been forgiven. We moved on with life. I'm glad you feel that way. Then the daughters were sent in. Jill and Jessa Duggar sat across from Kelly and defended their brother on camera. Jessa told the audience that calling Josh a child was so overboard and a lie, really. Jill Duggar later described that interview in the Amazon documentary Shiny Happy People as a S mission. It was designed, according to Jill, to save the family's TLC contract. Send them in to die.
You go say this for the family.
And I don't know what was said or what the agreement was or what was encouraged behind the scenes of their children when they went on camera. But Jill does, and she talks about it in her book. I mean, just think about that for a second. The victims were deployed to protect the brand. And they did it with smiles, because that's what they were trained to do from infancy, from the blanket. Michelle didn't just forgive Josh. She built the stage where his victims were expected to forgive him publicly on national television and perform wholeness while doing it. That's not grace. That's conscription. And then there's that robocall. In August of 2014, Michelle Duggar recorded a message distributed to voters across Fayetteville, Arkansas, opposing a non-discrimination ordinance. Her words verbatim from the recording,
"I don't believe the citizens of Fayetteville would want males with past child porn convictions that claim they are female to have a legal right to enter private areas that are reserved for women and girls."
This is her main concern. At the moment in time while her son's like kind of in a little hot water. She warned parents that the ordinance would endanger their daughters. She asked,
What do you want? Who do you want undressing next to your daughter at the public swimming pool's private changing area?
At that same time she recorded the call, Michelle Duggar had been sitting on knowledge of her own son's conduct against children for over a decade. The police report was sealed. The show was still on the air. The family was still being positioned as the gold standard of Christian moral authority in America. When Megyn Kelly confronted her about the contradiction on Fox News, Michelle's response was to redirect, to claim there was an agenda working against her family. Of course, because when you get put into a corner where you just ask a question, where you have to be accountable for your answers, it's an agenda. And that agenda is the one and the only
Satan. It's Satan. Hi, Michelle. How are you? Here from the depths. Oh, someone's going to ask you some tough questions. Just blame it on me. Just say it's me. It's good old Satan. I'm here for you, Michelle, in case you need anything.
Here is what we actually are looking at. Toxic positivity inside the Duggar household was not a personality trait. It was a suppression system with identifiable interlocking components. The voice train submission made audible. A woman with a self-described anger problem was taught by Gothard's material to whisper instead of actually address it. The anger didn't disappear. It just went underground, and so did everything else. Forced forgiveness. Victims were required to forgive their abuser as a theological obligation. In IBLP influence circles, forgiveness doesn't mean processing what happens to you. It means performing as though it didn't happen. If you live in the house, you still sit across from the person at meals, you still smile for the cameras, and you never ever say what it cost you. Keep sweet. The cultural mandate, reinforced by every layer of doctrine, that women and girls must protect, project pleasantness at all times. Anger is rebellion. Sadness is ingratitude. Disclosure is betrayal. And the brand, the television show, turned the performance into a commercial product. The family's financial survival now depended on the appearance of harmony. The stakes of breaking the silence weren't just spiritual. They were economic. Jim Bob Duggar controlled the contracts. The children weren't even party to them. The entire enterprise ran on one thing, the image holding it together. This combination, the doctoral suppression, trained obedience, compulsory forgiveness, and a financial engine that required the silence to continue, created a household where a child could be harmed and then trained to smile about it on camera. And the person most visibly enforcing that smile every single day in every single episode was Michelle. She may not have committed the abuse, and I am in no way saying that she did, although it is a little weird striking babies on blankets, if that's what happened. But she was the architect of the emotional environment that made it impossible for her daughters to say what happened, feel what they felt, or leave. But she didn't come up with it. IBLP did. You're right. But in that house, who's building? Who's the building blocks? Who's enforcing it? Who's running with it? Who's the adult who has the choice to say, you know what? I'm gonna enforce this. I'm gonna go down this road of belief, or I'm not. To those kids, she is the architect. Remember the umbrellas? They're looking up at mom. She's the architect of this way of thinking to them. Jill Duggar Dillard is in therapy now. She has publicly described the compound as a cult-like environment. She left. It cost her family relationships, access to the property, and years of her life spent untangling beliefs she was raised inside from infancy. Ginger Duggar wrote a memoir called Becoming Free Indeed, describing the process of dismantling IBLP teachings and the fear and anxiety that defined most of her life. After Joseph's arrest, she said on her podcast, "I do not think my heart could break like it has this week." Joanna Forsythe quietly walked away from IBLP before her marriage. After Joseph's arrest, she posted, "What has come out of my brother is heartbreaking and deeply disturbing. I have been a wreck this week." Jason Duggar and his wife called Joseph's alleged actions, evil and unthinkable. And then there's Josh, who I really think should just be the spokesperson for the family because he's about as ignorant as all. From federal prison, where he's serving 12 and a half years for possessing child CSAM material. Josh reportedly responded to his brother's arrest by claiming Joseph faces false accusations that can destroy a life. Really? Because I'm pretty sure, according to prosecutors, he admitted to it. I know he's pleading not guilty, and we'll get to that in a moment. But, there is that. The convicted brother defending the charged brother from inside a cell. The system is still running. And after 12 days of silence, while their daughters spoke, while their niece spoke publicly, while the rest of the family released statements condemning the alleged conduct, Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar finally said something. They expressed heartbreak, and then they made it about them, asking for privacy. Privacy.
His family spent two decades building a media empire on the premise that their private life was a public model. They invited cameras into their homes, their births, their courtships, their prayers. They positioned themselves as moral authorities. They spoke at IBLP conferences. Michelle recorded political robocalls, invading people's phones, telling strangers how to vote on matters involving the safety of children. They made their children's obedience a television product. Jim Bob ran for office more than once on the family brand, and now, after another son is convicted and one son is charged, and the system they built and profited from has been exposed in documentary, memoir, courtroom testimony, an arrest affidavit, podcast, now they would like some privacy. That request might carry weight if it hadn't come from the same people who put their victimized daughters on Fox News to defend their abuser on national television. It might land differently if Michelle hadn't recorded a robocall about child predators while sitting on a sealed police report about her own son. Privacy is something you extend to people who didn't spend decades telling the rest of us how to live. The Duggars claim moral authority over millions of families. They don't get to turn the cameras off just because the picture doesn't look the way they staged it. This is exactly the moment when we are going to keep talking about you, about your system, about every family that went through the same doctrine without a television show to eventually blow the lid off. So, excuse me while I look at you on privacy. Oh, okay. Fuck you. Compare the language, by the way. After Josh's conviction in 2021, Jim Bob and Michelle called it very grievous and pivoted immediately to supporting Anna and the children. After Joseph's arrest in 26, they expressed heartbreak and asked for space. Same formula, same pivot away from the victim, same redirect towards the family's pain. Different son, same machine. Toxic positivity isn't kindness. It's a lock on a door that only opens from the outside. And for the children raised inside the Duggar household, taught from their first year of life that obedience must be instant, cheerful, thorough, and unconditional, that door was held shut by the person who was supposed to open it for them. The person who whispered instead of screamed, who smiled instead of called the police, who sent her daughters onto a Fox News set to save a television contract instead of into a therapist's office to save themselves. Michelle Duggar is not charged with anything. She's not accused of a crime. But the question that keeps coming up, the one nobody in that family has ever answered, is whether the performance of joy can itself become a form of harm. Whether the woman holding the umbrella was also the one making sure nobody underneath it could see the rain. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to join us there, and we will continue it. Press subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. If you're finding our reporting valuable, leave us a review there. We do greatly appreciate it. We'll continue the conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.